Voices of Hope is a podcast of New Hope Presbyterian Church in Castle Rock, Colorado. You can listen to our sermons and other podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or any popular podcasting platform. Our worship times are on Sundays at 9 and 10:45 a.m.
This week we have a special worship service where Pastor Jordan and Pastor Russ answer your questions that you have about faith, life, and the Bible.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to worship here at New Hope Presbyterian Church. Glad that you're here. My name is Russ, and we are here on the Sunday after Easter to worship, and we're going to do it in a little different way than we normally do. We're going to have throughout the service a time of questions. It's billed as sort of a question the pastor, quiz the pastor, all those kind of things. But really, it gets down to something even deeper, which is the sacredness of questions. I want to talk a little bit about questions as we get together today, because I think on any given Sunday, when we come to worship, we come with our affirmations, the things we believe and we know we believe or we think we hope we believe. And then there's always those underlying questions. And sometimes the ones we're afraid to even whisper or afraid or admit that we even have them, we think like we shouldn't have them. I want to read a passage this morning. It's in your bulletin. It's the scripture of the day. And it gets to the, I think, why we're here. Why we're here on so many different levels. It is the story of Easter as it is told in Luke 24. And it's going to lead into questions. Now, you've been given some cards as you came in. And on those cards, you're going to be invited through the first part of the service, and now is fine, to write down a question. If you've got more than one, that's fine. Get another card. At some point, we're going to have you bring them up here. And Jordan and I are going to field some of those questions, not as the Bible answer men, but more as brothers and sisters who are wrestling with questions, because very early on the first day of the week at dawn, the women came to the tomb bringing the spices they had prepared. They found the stone rolled away from the entrance of the tomb. And when they went in, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. And while they were wondering about this, two men in shining clothes stood beside them. The women were very afraid and bowed their heads to the ground. And the men said to them, "Why are you looking for a living person in this place of the dead? He's not here. He's risen from the dead. Do you remember what he told you in Galilee? He said to the Son of Man must be handed over to sinful people, be crucified, rise from the dead on the third day." Then the women remembered what Jesus had said. The women left the tomb and told all these things to the 11 apostles and to the other followers. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and some of the other women who told the apostles everything that had happened at the tomb. But they did not believe the women because it sounded like nonsense. But Peter got up and ran to the tomb, bending down and looking in. He saw only the cloth that Jesus' body had been wrapped in. Peter went away to his home, wondering about what had happened. It is the wondering what had happened part that I want to land on this morning. Because for all the questions that people had about Jesus before the resurrection, what we see is after the resurrection, they were filled with questions. Filled with questions not only about what had happened, but how do we unpack what all that means? What are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to live? Read through any of the letters of Paul, and you see what he's doing is he's trying to answer questions. And these aren't bad. Somewhere along the line, you and I got the idea that questions are bad. I much prefer Abraham Heschel's insight when he says, we're closer to God when we are asking questions than when we think we have the answers. I think we are closer to God when we are asking questions because it means we're taking God seriously. We're taking the enormity of our own life and the mystery of God seriously. If you don't have any questions, you're not paying attention. Heschel went even one step further, and I love this quote. We worship God through our questions. It is when we bring our questioning hearts, our searching minds, that means we're taking God seriously. Today we're going to take God seriously with our questions. I'm going to invite you to write down some of them on those cards. A couple parameters. No questions about the Broncos or the draft. No questions about the Mueller report or politics. No questions about infrastructure or programmatic things or where we should put signs or any of that stuff. These are the questions that have to do with the deep questions of faith and around the Bible, about God, about meaning. It's a pretty wide open field. I'm going to begin this morning, and Jordan and I are a little bit later. We're going to actually have a two-minute clock on us because, you know, we talk. And so we're going to try and kind of bound that a little bit. But I wanted to start with, because I was struck by a few weeks back when we had our family worship, and David Smith was up here, and he was saying, and he turned and asked us questions. If you were here that day, you remember how powerful that was. And he says, predestination. I'll paraphrase. What's with that? We'd love to know. So I thought, well, let's start with that question that came out of the congregation on that day. And let me just take a few swings. Not to be the Bible answer man, but again, to just kind of give how it makes sense to me and where the questions are for me in that. So predestination is that idea that everything has been ordained somehow by God. My guess is that even though some of us say we don't believe in it, we kind of do. If you've ever said, you know, everything happens for a reason, that's predestination. If you have this idea, like most romance novels and movies, that there's one person who's fated for you, and to find that person, to find that vocation, to find that one thing is to find the meaning of your life, to miss it is to miss the appointment of your life, that's kind of predestination. It starts with some passages in the Bible where God seems to know everything. It kind of went through the Reformation and John Calvin who solidified it, and then it got even more narrow after that because our minds thinking in the 16th century when a closed world, a closed system, it made sense that God is in charge of everything, and if God is a God, then nothing happens by accident. Therefore, everything is ordained and planned by God, but what happens is our world is bigger than that. It used to define Presbyterians until about 100 years ago. It was absolutely essential that you believed it. 100 years ago, we got away from that because life is too big and the world was too expansive. But if you look in the dictionary, sometimes they will equate still to this day Presbyterians and predestination. Here's where I make sense of it. I think it does make great sense, and I understand where it comes from. I used to live on the West Coast, and when you live on the West Coast, you do things like sail. And I remember the first time I was sailing on this amazing boat. And I was at the front and it was just bouncing all around. And it seemed to me that with the waves, the swells, the wind, that we were all over the place. And it wasn't until I looked backwards and saw that we were in fact on a straight line. And that there really was someone at the till. And there really was a line and there was a direction. And then I could relax. Well, that must mean that whatever it looks like out here in the rearview mirror, this makes sense. I think predestination makes great sense. Not as predeterminism where your choices don't have any meaning, but as a place of trust that the one who got me this far, there's a story. The one who got me this far has got me here, and I can trust that God for the future. That's, to me, where predestination comes. Do I have a lot of questions? Oh, good Lord, yes. But at least when I look in the rearview mirror, when I look backwards and where we have been, it gives me confidence for the future. I think that's a great place to start for worship, by the way. A great place to start as we get ready to worship. Would you join me? So Jordan and I are going to move to the top here. And I was told in the interim there that evidently not everybody got a card. If you didn't get a card, don't despair, because we're going to take about 10 minutes to answer some questions right now. And then we're going to have some time at the end to do that as well, and it's kind of open mic, so anything spontaneous. If you've got a question, you'll hopefully get a chance to ask it as well. So you have brought up the cards. By the way, this was Jordan's idea, so if this goes south. Okay, good. All right, we'll get, long as we're clear. No, this is a great idea. I love this. And so we're going to go back and forth. And we have a way of doing this that we thought might be hopefully not too distracting, is there is a two-minute timer that you're going to actually see on the screen here in a minute. We're each going to take one of these questions. But first, because this isn't just Bible answer type stuff, Jordan was going to, I don't know if you had anything you wanted to add to the predestination question. And we'll do that for each other, and we'll both pitch in, even though we'll each pick a question as we go. And so the ball's in your court, bud.
Well, I think it's not necessarily predestination, but like a piece of predestination is also election. They kind of get lumped together a lot of times. And so the common thought is election is something that God preordains, predestines, elects people at the beginning of time to either go to heaven or hell. But really, I think what the Bible points us to in the terms of election is it's used often with the Israelites and the Hebrews in the Old Testament. And so what it really is, I don't think it's so much concerned with eternal destination, but I think it's more concerned with the here and now and who is elected as the light to the world, to be light in the darkness, who are the people. And sometimes that's a good way to kind of think about why there are some people that don't believe. Why are there certain people that are more gravitating towards spirituality, to God? Because they have been called and elected to show that to the rest of the world. So when people think about it in terms of eternal destination as election, I think the Bible points more towards if you believe now, that means you are elected to be the face of God to people here and now, a light in the darkness. So that's the only thing I would add to that.
Well, that's all wrong. I mean, come on. That was great. Thank you. All right. So let me start with one set of questions that are, I think they're connected here. So a loved one is engulfed by evil. How do I handle this? And there is a question from another one that I think comes at this from a different angle. How do I know that I'm doing God's work? So if everything's perfect, good. See what's going to happen? It's going to give me 2 minutes here in just a second. No pressure. So the question of evil has always been, that has plagued humankind since humans have been human. And I am struck by all the times that we try to explain it. I don't think evil is well explained. I think it's experienced, and I think we push back on it any way we can. I love the, I think it's Paul Neruda who said that you can cut down all the flowers, but you can't stop spring. And I think evil cuts down flowers. I think it destroys life. It dehumanizes, and it demeans, and it destroys from within. I think what we do, whether it is a loved one who seems to be engulfed in evil, and that could mean anything from addictions to, so many things, mental illness, or just a path that seems to make no sense at all. I think there are flowers that get cut down. And on the one hand, where it's important to try to boundary and so that it doesn't affect and we don't become enablers by just being complicit in allowing it to happen, at the same time to love and to pray and to be on the side of spring, and to encourage, to be on the part of things that give life. I think hope is the thing that we have that not only gives comfort in the midst of evil and suffering that it brings, it is also the protest. I think it's God's protest that this shall not be. And so I wouldn't run away from the this shall not be, this is wrong. I would lean into it and then give myself to the things that should be. And doesn't mean we're going to resolve it, but I think that's one way to live in that tension. That's how I come out with it.
You have 18 seconds.
I'm yielding my 17 seconds. No, if you could take longer.
I don't have much more to add to that.
All right.
I'm good.
All right.
With 4 seconds left,
big,
I don't want to touch
big
it.
Big chicken. Go. Wow. I didn't know we got the flashy thing. That's cool.
Get your attention if you're deep in thought. So the question I picked here was, how should we think of Judas? Without him, Jesus would not have been on the cross. Is he forgiven? I'm going to have extra time. So, all right. So this has been kind of something that has plagued a lot of people for a long time, a lot of theologians, historians. What exactly is Judas's place? And I think when we read the Gospels too, they're written after the fact that they're writing in the midst of being angry with a fellow friend who betrayed Jesus. And so there's a little bit of, you could see that in the Gospels when they talk about Judas later on. But what I like to say is Judas was a disciple of Christ. Judas believed in what Jesus was doing. It's obvious because otherwise he wouldn't have followed Jesus. And Jesus obviously trusted him throughout his ministry. So there's a couple of different ways that our world, theologians, historians have tried to kind of explore this topic of who Judas is and why he did what he did. I think sometimes people think Judas knew all along that he had to do this, that Jesus was telling him, this is your role to play in all this. Some other people think, you know, Judas was actually trying to usher in the kingdom of God quicker because the disciples and him thought this was going to be an overthrow of the Roman government, and he wasn't seeing that happen. So then he turned them into the Roman government to kind of force Jesus' hand to usher in the kingdom of God, and then was horrified when Jesus died on the cross. So I think in our dualistic brains, we try and think, Judas, is he good or bad? And I think it's not as simple as that. And I think Judas did play an important role, and Judas was a friend of Jesus, and I think there is hope and forgiveness and reconciliation for him, because in some ways, Judas is all of us. In some ways, we betray God and Jesus in our own ways, and we think God is not doing things quick enough, and we try to force it. And so I think just as there's hope for Judas, there's also hope for us.
Mm.
Do you have six
no,
seconds?
That's lovely. That's lovely. Yeah, I think there's going to be a reunion in heaven between Jesus and Judas. Everything I know about Jesus, and if God is God, then there is a reunion, and there is a hug, and a different kind of kiss of peace, and not one of betrayal, but one of reconciliation and forgiveness, and that's what heaven is heaven, seems to me. And if that's true, then I think it's true for all of us as well. So, a question, how do I reconcile the Bible versus the Big Bang, evolution of man, biblical accounts versus scientific accounts? I think this may be tied in, although it's not the same question, with someone who's asking, how do I answer an agnostic friend who says they just don't know there is a God? Often it's because it seems to me that that comes up because of the questions of science. It may not be in this particular case, but I'm going to try and tie some of those together. Let's see if it's going to let me do this. There we go. All right. So I have no problem reconciling the Bible, the idea of God and evolution. There was a time when it seemed like an uneasy relationship, and I know it was always pitted as, well, here's science, and it's telling us this stuff, but it doesn't correspond with one way to read the Bible. I don't think the Bible was written as a science book. It was trying to talk about the stuff of life, the great mysteries of life with the language of the day. And so it will talk about the four corners of the earth and the pillars and the firmament that is up there. A completely unscientific way, but it's not trying to answer those questions. It's trying to, given the milieu of the day, given the understanding of the day, try to insert faith into the everyday understanding. What we know now through science is more and more, and I believe God uses the facts and the revelation of science just as he does the revelation as we come to Scripture. I think when somebody talked about the day language and the night language of faith is the language of revelation, it's mystery, it's dreams, it's all kinds of vision, those kinds of things that we see coming again and again in the Bible. There's the day language of the facts, numbers, figures. I think night and day both belong to God. So I don't see any conflict in the sense that I think God is involved in it all. And we can lean in and go, what can we understand from, how do we understand God in light of evolution, in light of what we're learning, and in light of what we're yet to learn? I don't think we have to run from that. I think we lean in. I think there's great conversation to be had there because it all gets back to this idea of wonder. So for a friend who's agnostic, anybody who's agnostic, I get it. There's a lot of this stuff that doesn't make sense, and I think nobody has 100% of the answer. We go with what we think we've got, and we lean into that, and at some point perhaps that will lean more towards the idea and the reality of God for them, even it does for us. That's how I kind of pick that one. But
yeah. I just, I would just add that I think we've talked about this in youth group with our kids before, and it's not that science is disproving God, but science is just opening our eyes to the depth and diversity of God's creation and how intrinsically well it is made. And so I think I just tag that on there.
Great. We're going to take a pause here. I'm going to come back to this, and if you've got some open mic type questions for us a little bit, Jordan's got those. We'll put those together.
So like Russ said, this section, we're going to kind of have an open mic time, as some of you didn't receive a note card. So he has the mic, and hopefully, hopefully it's the one that doesn't make that noise. But maybe we'll try the next one, and then he'll come around. And so is there anybody that wants to ask a question?
Any brave hands this morning?
If not, then we'll go back to the cards.
Yeah. Nathan.
So Bella asked me the other day when we were on a hike.
Oh, no,
and,
not a Bella question. This is going to be trouble.
She said, are God and Jesus the same? And I tried to explain it, but I'd be curious what your take on that would be.
Yes, I think the hard part with the Trinity, with if you look at the cross up here, the I never know how to say that word,
triketra.
Triketra, uh-huh. Yeah. In the middle of the cross there is kind of symbolism of the Trinity, that there are three parts, but they are one, which is still kind of hard to, because we like to say they're three distinct, but they are all one. But then with our minds, we're like, well, that means they're three different beings. That's not true either. But they are one being that I like to say is expressed in different ways. And so Jesus is God. Jesus is God in the flesh. I think God believed at some point that we all knew a God existed, but we couldn't see, we couldn't touch, we couldn't experience God in some ways. And so it came in flesh form in Jesus, because we are humans. We need material things we need to see and touch. That's why we have this table also, that there is bread, there is wine. And so, yes, that's the answer to the question, that they are the same. Russ has probably done a lot more study on the Trinity. He can...
Yeah, so the Trinity has bugged people forever, including that's why it's never in the Bible. It's us reading backwards into it when Jesus says, the Father and I are one, or anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. So there is something about Jesus that is so transparent to the divinity of God that when you're looking at Jesus, you're looking and you're experiencing God. How that works out, I have no idea. But that's where it falls for me, that in a sense, when you are seeing Jesus, when you're dealing with Jesus, this is the face of Jesus. This is the heart of, this is the heart of God. This is the face of God. This is the hands and feet of God. And we're being called into, when we're actually being called into that same fellowship. So I would say yes, and with a big asterisk for all the other questions that come down the road.
I think there's no good illustration for the Trinity, but my favorite that I've come up with is Neapolitan ice cream. There's that there's three flavors, but it's all
sure.
Ice cream, right? It's all one thing. So because people have said before that water, you know, can turn into ice or gas or whatever. That's still not, because it can't be all those things at once. And yeah. But Neapolitan ice cream can.
Sure. I'll have what he's having. That's great. Any other questions for the congregation? Since we right nailed there. That one so well. Yeah. Judy.
How do you support someone who has renounce their faith, uh-huh, besides just love?
Yeah. So how do you support someone who's renounced their faith? Boy, isn't that a question that we get asked more and more, and it's more and more the reality of our lives. So I would say the first thing that I find, because I get to do that a lot with people and in the question, is I find that sometimes the faith that people are renouncing is worth renouncing. The God they don't believe in is a God I don't believe in either. Sometimes what they are pushing against, what they are renouncing, is their version of God that's been given to them through a minister, a priest, a school, a parent, or something that is deadly. And maybe the healthiest thing is to renounce it. The healthiest thing is to say, I don't believe it. I don't have to believe it. I won't go down that path. Because what they end up talking about, the things often that I find, not every case, but often what I find is they're talking about things about love, and they're talking about compassion, and they're talking about justice, and go, that's it. That's that Jesus, that walking on the earth. That's what Jesus has come to bring, and that's what Jesus embodies. So, especially when it's a loved one, especially when it's in the family, your answer was the right one. Just love. Just love. I got to believe that as long as we keep trying to pull people, if you've ever had a tug of war, the harder you pull this way, the harder they pull that way. And now it's about the tugging. It's not about the journey itself, to walk alongside, to listen to where it seems good, to make your own observations. Great. Don't be afraid to affirm the renouncing of their faith, because what they're renouncing oftentimes is a faith that needs to be renounced. It's too small of a God, too small of a box that we've put God in. And where you can say, I don't believe in that God either. Boy, now there's some common ground. So I know that's a simple way to answer a really complex question, but that's the first thing that comes to my mind. And you want to?
I think on a practical level of being someone who's kind of went through questioning of my faith is being able to have those spaces, especially if it's a loved one, that they can ask questions and you can play off of those questions and talk with them. Because kind of the environment I grew up in was you ask questions and then you're given the right answers. And I think it's important to be open to those questions and saying, I don't know the answer, or that's one I struggle with too. I think just on a practical way of like that, because faith is a journey. It's not just something you obtain and you have it and it's there forever, but it's a journey of highs and lows. So this may be a low or possibly a high at some point.
Wonderful. Great questions. You may have some more. I hope you do. No. Do Randy's one got one. And then you always ask hard questions.
Which translation of the Bible is the best one to read? And?
Oh, and there's a...
So close. When is it okay to disagree? When, is it okay to disagree
with translation? Or
are those two questions or about translations? Yes. One question. Okay. Yes. All right, best translation to read, write this down. Whichever one makes sense to you, whichever one you're going to read, whichever one that makes sense to you, that you don't have to spend more time trying to figure it out. If it speaks to you, if you're going to read it, if you're going to use it, use that one. I can't tell you how many different translations I've got on my shelves. I love them all. They all give different angles into it. Sometimes I fall in love with one over the other. But if it sits on a shelf, no matter how good of a translation it is, it's not a good one. So read the one you've got. Is it okay to disagree? Yes, because I just said some things that I know some people in here going, oh, heavens, that's wrong. That's wrong. And that's okay. And that's how we get to questions. That's how we get to the back and forthness of it. And that's whether it's about translations, whether it's about Trinity, whether it's about anything. Pastors do not speak ex cathedra. We do not have infallibility. We are people who are wrestling with and answering questions, and it's in the questions back and forth that church is meant to be a safe place where truth emerges. And the only way that happens is when we get to ask honest questions and disagree honestly and work on that. With that, I think we're going to wrap this piece of it up. If you've got other questions, we would love to keep them going. Maybe we'll do this again. And this has been fun. But as we start with our questions and we also come and everything centers around who Christ is, I can't think of a better hymn maybe than the one we've got in front of us this morning to close our service. Would you stand with me? Let's sing together.
If you enjoyed our podcast, please rate and review us on iTunes. You can also check out more about New Hope at newhopeprez.org. And we will see you next time.